A complexion, his dark hair cropped into a buzz cut. The other was huskier, blonde, pink-cheeked. Come with us, please, said the dark one. Where? Why? Who are you? Mr. Humphreys wants to see you. Now, at this hour, it's... Please, said the blonde, slipping a dead black pistol from inside his jacket. It fires tranquilizing darts, said the dark one, but you wake up with a bitching headache. Don't make us use it on you. Cardenas looked up and down the corridor. The only other person in sight was a mousy little woman who immediately turned away and started walking in the opposite direction. Now, said the blonde, pointing his pistol at her. With a resigned droop of her shoulders, Cardenas nodded her surrender. The blonde put his gun away, and they started along the corridor towards the escalators. At least this one doesn't have a snake, the blonde whispered hoarsely to his partner. The other man did not laugh.
EVA.
Pancho felt an old excitement bubbling up inside her as she wormed her arms through the spacesuit sleeves. After more than 5 days of being cooped up in the ship, she was going outside. It was like being a kid in school when the recess bell rang. Standing by the inner airlock hatch where the spacesuits were stored, she popped her head up through her suit torso's neck ring, grinning happily to herself. This is gonna be fun, she thought. Dan looked up tight, though, as he held her helmet in his arms and watched her pull on the gloves and seal them to the suit's cuffs. Jealous? She teased. Worried, he replied. I don't like the idea of you going out alone. Piece of cake, boss, Pancho said. I ought to go with you, or Amanda, maybe. With a shake of her head, Pancho countered, Mandy's got to stay at the controls. Shouldn't have both pilots out at the same time, if he can help it. Then I'll suit up. Whoa! I've seen your medical record, boss. No outside work for you. The safety regs say EVA should be performed by 2 astronauts whenever possible, Pancho finished for him. And since when did you start quoting IAA regulations? Safety is important, Dan said. Inside the spacesuit, with its hard shell torso and servo motor amplified gloves, Pancho felt like some superhero out of a kid's video confronting a mere mortal. I'll be fine, she said as she took the helmet from Dan's hands. Nothing to worry about. But if you run into trouble, tell you what, boss. You suit up and hang out here at the airlock. If I run into trouble, you can come out and save my butt. How's that? He brightened. Okay, good idea. They called Amanda down from the bridge as Dan struggled into the lower half of his suit and tugged on the boots. By the time he was completely suited up, backpack and all, except for the helmet, Pancho was feeling antsy. Okay, she said as she pulled the bubble helmet over her head and sealed it to the neck ring. I'm ready to go outside. Amanda hurried back to the bridge while Dan stood there grinning lopsidedly at her, his head sticking out of the hard suit like some kid posing for a photograph from behind a cardboard cutout of an astronaut. Pancho opened the inner hatch of the airlock and stepped through. The airlock was roomier than most, big enough to take 2 spacesuited people at a time. Through her helmet, she heard the pump start to clatter, saw the telltale on the control panel switch from green to amber. The sound dwindled to nothing more than a slight vibration she felt through her boots as the air was pumped out of the chamber. The light flicked to red. Ready to open outer hatch, she said, unconsciously lapsing into clipped argot of flight controllers and pilots. Amanda's voice came through the tiny speaker set into her neck ring. Open outer hatch. The hatch slid up, and Pancho stared out at an infinite black emptiness. The helmet's glass steel was heavily tinted, but within a few seconds her eyes adjusted, and she could see dozens of stars, then hundreds, thousands of them, staring solemnly at her, spangling the heavens with their glory. Off to her left, the bright haze of the zodiacal light stretched like a thin arm across the sky. She turned her back to the zodiacal light's glow and attached her safety tether to one of the rungs just outside the hatch. Going out, she said. Proceed, Amanda replied. Give me the location of the leak, Pancho said, as she clambered out and made her way up the hand grip set into the crew module's side. On your screen... She peered at the tiny video screen strapped to her left wrist. It showed a schematic of the module's superconducting network of wires, with a pulsating red circle where the leak was. Got it. Although she knew the ship was under acceleration and not in zero-G, Pancho still felt surprised that she actually had to climb along the handgrips, like climbing up a ladder, toward the spot marked on the schematic. Deep in her guts, she had expected to float along, weightlessly. "Okay, I'm there," she said at last. "Tether yourself," Dan's voice commanded sternly. Pancho was still tethered to the rung next to the airlock hatch. Grinning at Dan's fretfulness, she unreeled the auxiliary tether from her equipment belt and clipped it to the closest grip. "I'm all tucked in, Daddy," she quipped. "Now to find the leak," she thought. She bent close and played her helmet lamp on the module's skin. The curving metal was threaded with thin wires running along the module's long axis. There was no obvious sign of damage, no charred spot where a micrometeor might have hit, no mini geyser of escaping nitrogen gas. "It can't be more than a pinhole leak," Pancho told herself. "Am I at the right spot?" she asked. No answer for a few moments. Then Amanda replied, "Put your beacon on the wire you're looking at, please." The radio beacon was strapped to Pancho's wrist. She laid her right forearm on the wire. "How's that?" "You're at the proper spot. Can't see any damage." "Replace that section and bring it in for inspection, then." She nodded inside her helmet. "Will do." But she felt silly, cutting out what looked to be a perfectly good length of wire. "Something's wonky here," Pancho thought. "This ain't what we think it is, I bet."
Behind his unkempt beard, Big George was frowning with worry as he sat at one of the consoles in the spaceport's control center. This little cluster of desks was occupied by Astro employees monitoring Star Power One's flight. They sat apart from the regular Cellini controllers who handled the traffic to and from Earth. George wanted to send his message to Dan in complete privacy. The best the Astro controllers could do was to hand him a headset and tell him to keep his voice down. Wishing they'd worked out a code before Dan had impetuously sailed off, George pulled the pin mic to his lips and said hurriedly, "Dan, it's George. Dr. Cardenas has disappeared. He told me last night she was worried that Humphreys wants to kill you. When I called her this morning, she wasn't in her office or in her quarters. I can't find her anywhere. I haven't told Cellini security about it yet. What do you want me to do?" He pulled off the headset and nudged the controller who had given it to him. The man had been studiously keeping his back to George. He swiveled his chair to face the Aussie. "Finished so soon? How long will it take to get an answer?" The controller tapped at his keyboard and squinted at the display on his console's central screen. 17 minutes and 42 seconds for your message to reach them. Same amount of time for their answer to get back here, plus a couple of additional seconds. They're moving pretty damn fast.
35 minutes. George said.
"You've got to allow some time for them to hear what you've got to say and decide what to say back to you. Probably an hour at least."
"I'll wait."
End of Side 12.
Martin Humphreys unconsciously licked at the thin sheen of perspiration beating his upper lip. He hated talking with his crotchety, sour-faced father, especially when he had to ask the old man for advice. "You kidnapped her?" W. Wilson Humphreys' wrinkled face looked absolutely astonished. "A Nobel Prize scientist? You kidnapped her?" "I've brought her here, to my home," Humphreys said, holding himself rigidly erect in his chair, exerting every gram of willpower he possessed to keep from squirming. "I couldn't let her warn Randolph." The conversation between father and son was being carried by a tight laser beam, directly from Humphreys Space Systems Communications Center on the top of Alphonsus Crater's Ringwall Mountains to the roof of the senior Humphreys estate in Connecticut. No one could eavesdrop unless they tapped into the laser beam itself, and if someone did, the drop in the beam's output at the receiver would be detectable. "Killing Randolph isn't bad enough," grumbled the old man. "Now you're going to have to kill her, too." "I haven't killed anybody," Humphreys said tightly. "If Randolph has any brains at all, he'll turn back." It took nearly 3 seconds for his father's reply to reach him. "Sloppy work. If you want to remove him, you should have done it right." Humphrey's temper flared. "I'm not a homicidal maniac. Randolph is business, and anyway, if he dies, it will look like an accident. His ship fails out there in the belt, and he and his crew are killed. Nobody will know